From the permanent. Na sati vidyate bhavam, na bhavam vidyate sati. What is sat and what is asat? This is not just a philosophical principle. Of course, philosophy is always there. It's, I mean, a lot of you are students and I think whatever you study, everyone studies, there's philosophy of science and philosophy of biology and philosophy of history, and even if sometimes you don't study it, there's a basic philosophy around which sort of motivates everything. And there's also a philosophy to existence, which isn't so optional, and neither is it something that's subjective or something that needs to be discovered. Krishna's already giving it, and just like law books, for instance, in this country, are based upon, well, there is no constitution, there's a Magna Carta, but in other places, other democracies, they have a constitution. And the constitution's relatively short, just like the American Constitution is a very short piece of work. And then upon that you have libraries upon libraries of law books that take the very essence of that belief and faith, the ethos upon which that whole political and social structure builds up on. And then that gets sort of developed. And if some laws come, and very often laws are passed, and then sometimes later on when it comes to putting them into practice or that they're being actually enforced, then someone challenges that this law is unconstitutional and they'll take it to the Constitution Court. And then sometimes the Constitution Court will overturn that law saying it's not in harmony with the Constitution. This may be a good law according to maybe some particular circumstance, but it doesn't really represent what this country is all about. And that goes on everywhere. So Krishna lays down sort of the constitution of existence by defining, at least in this list that I quoted, what is sat and what is asat, what is temporary and what is permanent. And if you don't know this, then you're going to be very confused in life. Not only if you don't know it, but if your life isn't based on this, then it's just chaos. Life is chaos, the world is chaos. So, is the world in chaos? If you had some other opinion, then you must not be reading the newspapers or turning on the news on a regular basis. It's really in chaos everywhere. Politically, religiously, economically, every way, it's chaotic. There may have been certain times when the chaos was less, but it was still chaotic. And Krishna says it's going to be chaotic unless you get the system right, unless you understand the way things are. And it's not up for votes, it's not a democratic regime that, well, I don't like these laws, we'll change it, I don't like the constitution, because that's a difficult thing to change constitution. You really have to change the government. And anyway, the way things are, the way things work, is not something that It's up to our opinion, what we think, or what the way we'd like it to be. But rather, it's our business to accept it as it is, and try to understand that this is the way it was, this is the way it is, this is the way it's going to be. And if we want to really work and live in harmony in this world, we have to accept the basic parameter. And here the basic parameter is just understand these two things, that there are some things in this world which are temporary and other things which are eternal. What's temporary is everything that you see, and what is eternal you don't see, but it's the source of everything that appears to live, and that is the soul. So nasate vidyate bhavo navavo vidyate sata upayor apadrishtuntas tvanyos tattva darshivi. Tattva darshivi means to see. So if you want to see things the way they are, if you're a real seer of the truth, tattva, then you have to be able to discriminate between these two things. And then that's one thing. Someone who discriminates is a philosopher. But you can't live philosopher. In other words, you can't be a philosopher. You have to actually live that lifestyle. You have to live philosophy. And therefore, our entire existence and all the different aspects of that should be based upon the reality of who we are and that which is permanent, and utilizing the facilities that are offered by that which is temporary, and realizing that it's temporary, and not getting too hung up about the fact that temporary things fade away, and realizing that actually reality and who we are is involved in the permanent. And of course then the permanent, Krishna says, that which is within this body, that thing which doesn't change. And he gives us a way to see what is it that doesn't change, that even though everything us, even though everything about us changes, that something doesn't change. Something very, very essential remains the same. And who is it that remains the same? There's something else, there's something permanent about us that isn't changing. Our body's changing, how we look changes, how we think changes, how we behave changes, but something about us that gives us the right to have the same passport year after year, despite the fact that we're changing, isn't changing. And Krishna says that is the eternal soul, that is the spirit, and it is this spiritual thing was doesn't change. And this material thing, then all throughout the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna will explain how matter changes. And what is the nature of that change? So, adhyantavanta kante, anate shura mate buddha. It has a beginning, it has a sort of growth stage, and then it has an end. It all comes to an end. Now in our modern society, when people are really make a lot of money just by investing money, they don't particularly do anything else with it, but they invest it. They invest it in bonds or stocks or commodities or just in currency. Whatever, no one will make an investment that you know comes to an end. In other words, the end result of your investment is zero. You lose everything. I mean, not only is that a bad investment, you're crazy if you make that type of investment. And yet, Krishna is making this point, the anta. When you invest in the temporary, when you invest in this body, in this house, in this world, in this country, and everything else that's related to it, it comes to zero. So Krishna says, when death comes, then everything's gone. So you can argue with it. You lose whatever you've got, your house, your car, your car. I repeat this so many times, it's like a mantra, it's all gone. So how can so many smart people who spend so much time getting educated, spend all their time in investing things that are temporary, utilizing it is one thing, but considering it to be reality and thinking that this is what I'm going to focus everything on, this is like a misuse of the Constitution. The Constitution is good. All right, matter is here. You cannot deny matter. You cannot deny this body. This body, but it's an instrument. It's not the goal. It's a means for the goal. And what is the goal? The goal is actually to understand that which is sat, that which is eternal. You use the asat in the service of sat. But now, if I sit down individually with most of the persons here, and I say, how much time have you got for chanting 16 rounds a day and studying Srimad Bhagavatam? Then you'll tell me, I don't have time, which means that you're putting so much energy and time into asat, and you're just using the sat, well, if it facilitates. How many people pray in front of Lord Jagannath? Is everyone praying, Lord Jagannath, take away all my material possessions, take away my desires, take away everything, and just give me love for you? Never. Should record people's minds when they're... So that's not... People are praying, but we're praying for different things. And very often we're praying that even if there is such a thing as spiritual, even if there's such a thing as a supreme spirit, like God, then we should use that in the service of the asat. Things are backwards. It's a backwards constitution. Well, at least we're not using things the way they are. We're misusing. So yes, we use our bodies. We use our intelligence. We use our education. We have to work to live in this world. But what's the purpose? The purpose is that we achieve perfection in this life. And perfection begins by knowing who you are. It doesn't end up by knowing who you are. It ends by beginning knowing who you are. Isn't it? I mean, what can you do unless you know who you are? If you don't know who you are, where do you go? So if you don't have a license, driver's license, passport, you've forgotten who you are. Where are you in this world? You can't even go to the store. You can't even buy a pint of milk. You can't do anything. Because you can't go home. You don't know where you are. You don't know who you are. You don't know where home is. So, and yet, we spend unbelievable amounts of time and energy in learning so many other things. We don't put... How much time did you spend studying the Gita today? I don't have time. I don't have time for myself. I've got time for everything else. I've got time for everything that's going to be lost. But for me, I don't have any time. So no wonder we're frustrated, despite the fact that we may have more than people have had, at least in the not-too-distant past. We have a high standard of living, at least for the body, but in that high standard of living, in that nice apartment, in that very comfortable office building or wherever that we're working, we're in unbelievable anxiety, more and more anxiety than ever before. There was no such thing prior to Mr. Freud. There was no such thing as psychiatrists. And one is not because people didn't know about psychiatry, is there wasn't so much of a need for it. Now there's an increasing need, and of course it's not just that we need psychiatrists, the psychiatrists also need psychiatrists. Because like Shankara Pandit says, one comes to misery by associating too much with the miserable. So counselors are compelled, they're obligated, right? They have to get so much counseling on a regular basis. they have to unload all that stuff, otherwise they short circuit as well. So people are, marriages fail more than ever before. People commit suicide more than ever before. The percentage of people who are strung out on drugs, alcohol, cigarettes, and everything is, what does it mean? It means we're not happy being who we are. We're not even happy being this body. What to speak of being the soul? Therefore, we have to have some kind of artificial way of inducing some kind of pleasure. And then, of course, on top of that, life is becoming more and more insecure. People are worrying about some kind of security, but you have no security. You get on the tube, you could get blown up. You send your child to school, his classmate may shoot him. You read the papers, you know what's going on. But we always think it's not going to happen to me. But if it does happen to me, then we say, why me? It's got to be somebody. So somebody has to be the me. And it's becoming increasingly more and more. So isn't it obvious that things aren't working? That there's something very, very fundamentally wrong. Of course, in a materialistic society, people don't want to address this issue here. Materialistic means asat. That the value is in asat. The value is not in sat. That's a materialistic society. A materialistic society may believe in God. They may go to church or synagogues or temples. But still, what is their main priority? That which is temporary. That which is material. That's what we're living. So I may be doing my puja, I may be offering my worship, I may be asking for God, but it's still a materialistic society. But something's very fundamentally wrong, but then you really have to, maybe we've really misunderstood what the constitution of the world is, what this world is all about, and maybe we've got to see things from a different angle of vision. Maybe we have got it wrong. Our whole philosophy of life needs to be revamped, and we need to see that it's more important to know who you are than just to always try to be someone who you're not, but rather actually find out who is it by constitution that we are, that we're a spirit soul, we're a living entity, that ultimately we're servants of God, and then figure out how it is that we're going to become perfect servants of God while living in this world. All right, but that's not a big thing. It's not a big thing because the cat's running around in the street, and where was I yesterday? Lester. We're driving down Lester. And this fox ran across. No, he didn't run across the street. He walked across the street as if he owned the place. Anyway, but this fox, living in downtown Leicester, he's making a living. He didn't go to university, he didn't go to high school, he doesn't know how to read, right? Doesn't know what a computer is. But he's living, he's making a living, and he seemed to be pretty confident of himself. He seemed to be more secure than most of the people who were sort of tottering around at that time of night in Leicester. So if we just look around, we see other living entities are doing it somehow or another. They're also achieving that, and it's not so bad. Being outside, you know, as a bird in this type of rain isn't good, but somehow they've got it worked out. I saw it when I was in Swansea just recently. I was staying at the House of Devotee up on this hill, and I was looking down. So, these houses on the opposite side of the street, they were way below, it must have been like 5 meters below us. And I was seeing that when it was cold outside. And birds, they come, the pigeons and other birds, they come to the chimney and they sit around the edge of the chimney and they warm themselves up like that. So they've got a heating system, and you're paying for it. They didn't get a bill. They're warming up. Anyhow, it this we as individuals, as thinking, rational human beings, need to, when we look at the world, see that just because everyone else is going in a direction, does that mean that I have to go in that direction? And if things really aren't working, maybe I should consider Krishna's statement here in the Gita and see if this whole way of basing everything, putting all this emphasis, dependence, over-dependence, addiction, more or less, on material things, whether this is actually really wrong and this needs to be revamped and have to have like a new approach to life. And it's very difficult to do. They have these takeover firms, and people make unlimited amounts of money. But what do? You have a company who's generally been running for a long, long time, and they can't see the forest for the trees. They're just, if they're breaking even, they're doing well, or at least they're maintaining the status quo. And whatever product it is that they're producing, they've been doing the same thing for the last 50 years, and they'll continue to do it for the next 50 years, but it's not really profitable. But they're just too lost in order to make that type of change. And someone comes along who sees everything from a whole different angle, who's not attached, who's not involved, and he says, yes, if we take this company, if we fire half the employees, if we drop two-thirds of the, different assets that they have, we can turn it around, make it really profitable, and sell it for twice what we bought it for. And why? Because they've got a different perspective. They're not caught up in this whole quagmire that you get caught in when you're in the system. They're looking at it from outside, at least that company's system. And that's a difficult thing to do. It requires real objectivity, or it really requires a complete detachment from a way of looking things and looking things in a different way. And this is what Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita gives. And furthermore, Srila Prabhupada in his purports, he gives us a whole different way of viewing everything. He's doing this like from one of these, is that what they call takeover firm?
Yeah.
Private equity company. So Srila Prabhupada is looking at it like that. He's looking at it from a completely different perspective. He's looking at it from the perspective of someone who's completely situated on the spiritual platform, completely dedicated to sat, to that which is eternal. Although Prabhupada lived in this world, he got an education, he went to college, he was a professional man, a family man, he knows all of it. And Srila Prabhupada never lost perspective, never lost it. So when Tamal Krishna Maharaj, even in the last days they were speaking, Prabhupada was telling him, he said that grihastas should have some independence. He said, but they shouldn't have too much independence. Because if they have too much independence, then they'll become degraded. And then Srila Prabhupada said, but what about Bhaktivinoda Thakur and you? He said, you just sort of like lived there, out there in the world, all alone, and at the same time you were able to do so much. Srila Prabhupada said, that's different. He said, he didn't say that's different. He said, we were different. And then in the conversation, and then Tamal Krishna Maharaj, he would tell me this because he told me on different occasions the same thing. They say that basically Srila Prabhupada was saying were different because they were liberated souls. They weren't connected with this body, so they could live that type of lifestyle where Srila Prabhupada was just living in Bombay all alone and practicing Krishna consciousness. And so in other words, the Prabhupada is having the experience of living in this world, and he's not speaking as a theorist. He's talking very practically. He's got his own family. He's got his children. He's got his job. If he's done a job, he has his own businesses. But Srila Prabhupada is pointing out that While doing all of that, Prabhupada was keeping everything in was keeping Krishna in the center. He was living as devotees should live, who have sat, who have the essence of life as the focus of their existence. Prabhupada continued to preach. He wrote books, he commented on books, he spread Krishna consciousness. Bhaktivinoda Thakur found places at Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's birthplace, managed Jagannath Temple. This was all going on while they were grihasthas. And of course, Srila Prabhupada at a certain point, you know, that he manifests the Krishna consciousness movement to give a real foundation, to give a real opportunity for people not only just to read the Bhagavad Gita, which is very good. It's like, all right, you've got a constitution, but if you don't have a country in which to practice your constitution, what do you do with it? So Srila Prabhupada established the International Society for Krishna Consciousness as an institution in which devotees won't be too independent, where they're actually connected, where they have a connection to each other, and where they can exchange and share those values by which they can live a reality-centered life instead of an illusion-centered life. A life which is based upon spiritual values, and the material things are to facilitate that. Priorities, just like earlier I was speaking to Vaitarthiyata and was telling you it's a matter of priority. What is your priority in life? If the priority is to be Krishna conscious and everything else is meant to facilitate that. If the other one is that I'm going to be successful in this world and meanwhile I'm also adding Krishna consciousness to that, that's a different thing. And because it's a different thing, you should understand that they have a different result. It's one thing that I add Krishna to my life, and it's something else that Krishna is my life. So you make Krishna your life, you become Krishna's life. You add Krishna to your life, and he may consider what he wants to do with you. So it's different. One is called pure devotional service, and the other one is called mixed devotional service. Pure devotional service leads to perfection. Mixed devotional service leads to birth in the world again. So it's not that any type of chanting, any type of reading, any type of Hare Krishna leads to the same goal. It's a question of what's the orientation. So our orientation needs to be that, because that works. Now it's more and more rare to find that, but even here, for instance, in the UK, there are some very pious businessmen who I know personally. Their ethos, their ethic is that if you follow the teachings of the Vedas and if you live a life according to Dharma, that is the way to become materially successful. In other words, one should be successful like that if success is in one's karma. If it's not in your karma, it doesn't matter what it is. But whatever we do, we should act according to the principles of Dharma, and Dharma means that which facilitates spiritual realization. Anyway, I'm not going to go on, maybe have some questions and answers, but at least the essence of what I'm trying to say is that we should use the Bhagavad Gita as the real constitution. It's only 700 verses long, the real constitution of a value-centered life. And when I talk about values, not material values, not moral values, not ethical values, but spiritual, eternal values. And then in that, if you're destined to be successful, you'll be successful. And if you're not destined, then there's a lot of unsuccessful people out there. It doesn't matter what they're doing, or no matter how hard they try. So Yudhisthira Maharaj was very successful. He didn't want the world. Krishna forced it on him. So he was willing to live in a village. Krishna wanted him to live with unlimited wealth. But Yudhishthira Maharaj's principle was that he wanted simply Krishna's service. He wasn't interested in other things. Just like Arjuna. And you read Srimad Bhagavatam and Mahabharata. This is the culture. This was India's. It wasn't India's culture. That was the world's culture, because India was the world. Now it's just getting smaller and smaller all the time. But it was the world. And that was the world's culture. That you put Krishna in the center. It doesn't mean vigyatam sarvaliva, vigyatam bhavanti. You just serve Krishna, you just put the eternal in the center, and then all the other little pieces will fall in place. Don't worry about it. It'll, at least what you deserve, that you'll get. What Krishna wants you to have, what you need, you'll get. The basic necessities, you'll get. And we see the example is there, for instance, of Sudama Vipra. He was a Brahmin. Brahmins don't work. He would rather starve than work. And Bhagavatam didn't say that. Because Sudama Vipra didn't have anything to eat, he went out and opened a news agency down the corner. He'd starve. Because if Krishna wants me to eat, then he'll give me something to eat. Why should I go out of my way? My business isn't working, my business is teaching. So he continued like that. And then Krishna forced on him. He made him very, very wealthy. So that's Krishna consciousness, that we have this faith that, yes, let me concentrate on that which is eternal, and that will certainly be for my both temporary and ultimate benefit. And that's called Krishna consciousness. And then there are other versions of Krishna consciousness, but anyway, I already mentioned something about that.